it's been a year in the planning to have you on. And I remember when your assistant said, you know, we still have you on the radar, but it's going to take some more time. And I'm like, oh, I got time. No problem. I'll wait. I'm totally into this.
Yeah. Thank you for being patient. As we were talking before we clicked record, it's just like one of those times in my life, periods of time, and everyone is busy like all the time. I get it, but it's just one of those times right now where I'm exceptionally busy and I'm just riding with it. I just know that it's a temporary phase. So
there you go. Well, I can't wait to get into this. Just say hello to anyone who's coming in the chat. Please do say hello. Accidental Alchemist has been waiting on her notification there. And Brandon Thomas and Paul, welcome. I'm so glad. I hope you don't mind me saying your real name out there. It's going to be a wonderful conversation. And I bet people know you, but I'm gonna have a go through your bio anyway for anyone that might not be already familiar with your work. Daniel Alex Zek is an independent researcher, podcaster, speaker, writer, former Army captain, husband, and father of two young children, which I had the pleasure to meet in Texas when I was there. And another one on the way. He's best known for his popular podcast, The Way Forward with Alex Zek, which is consistently one of the highest ranking alternative health podcasts in the world. So what an amazing accomplishment that is in a short time. Alec is the founder and chief storyteller of The Way Forward, an organization focused on educating, empowering, and uniting men and women from all walks of life in pursuit of health, liberty, and awareness, and the producer of the viral educational series, The End of COVID. He's also, we should talk in code, by the way. I didn't let you know that, just to preserve.
I'm usually pretty mindful of that myself, just automatically. So
good. Yeah, I just said the word there. So anyway, he's also the former executive director and founder of Health Freedom for Humanity. Alec received his BS in systems engineering from the United States Military Academy at West Point. And I had a chance to reread through the story that you told about yourself, which is very powerful. I know that you have that. I think I saw it on your Telegram, or I'm not sure exactly where I ran across it. But wow, what a life you've lived, Alec.
Yeah. It's been a life. Yeah. And I'm genuinely grateful for all of it. Grateful for all of it. Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Hello, Learning Time. And Anne made it. Fantastic. Super Transformers, she's calling us. That's lovely. And I do feel like these meetings are exactly that, the opportunity to not just raise energy, but to invite a transformation that might not have been otherwise possible. And so I have no doubt our conversation is going to go in that direction. Is there anything that you want to say more by way of introduction, what you have going on?
I was raised in a pretty chaotic environment, and my upbringing shaped me in ways that I'm incredibly grateful for now, recognizing them, I wouldn't say immediately while they were occurring, but as opportunities for transmutation, for alchemy, if you want to call it that. And I'm incredibly grateful for those experiences. And I guess two experiences that I guess put a stamp on making me who I am today were witnessing my mom perpetually sick under the care of allopathic doctors. She was under the care of psychiatrists and put on multiple benzodiazepines and SSRIs over the course of nearly 10 years, watching her suffer tremendously with that. And then upon adopting a natural approach to health, drastically reversed those issues. And then my wife, who I had just married at the time, this is back in 2016, entire time that I had known her, and we've known each other, been dating since we were 16, which is wild to say, also started adopting that natural approach to health. And she was suffering with, quote, lupus and rheumatoid arthritis under the care of multiple rheumatologists over the course of also nearly 10 years. And after seeing my mom begin to heal drastically, we adopted the same approach for my wife back in 2016, and she healed drastically. And that sent me down the never-ending rabbit hole of dissecting all the things that I had been conditioned to believe, which started obviously with health, more so on the psychotropic medications and the nutrition side of things, but then led into questioning the injectable pharmaceutical products and questioning the entire germ paradigm, questioning 9/11, questioning government, questioning all the things. And that all kind of came to a head in 2020, as it did for a lot of people. And at the time, I was serving as a captain in the Army, knew that I wanted to get out of the Army, knew that I needed to get out of the Army, but didn't know what I wanted to do next. And I saw the whole charade, I won't say the word, the whole charade of 2020 as an opportunity to deepen my self-exploration, deepen my authenticity. I wouldn't say that I like literally saw an opportunity, but it was more that I felt so compelled to share my authentic thoughts publicly for the first time. And that's what I started doing in 2020. And I've been really doing that ever since. And I'm incredibly grateful for this journey. And I guess these are the types of things that I do now. And I do this while supporting my wife and two kids. And I have a third one that'll be here soon, in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So I'm incredibly grateful. I'm incredibly grateful that I'm doing this. It's really surreal.
That's amazing. Yeah, I had a moment the other night myself with just going, I can't believe that every single thing that I do in my life is meaningful. Mm-hmm. Everything, every conversation, all the work. It's not that common.
No, it's not. Oh my goodness, it's not. And I mean, there's times where it can be stressful. There's times where it can become very financially tight, of course. But if I really sit and reflect on what I was doing, and obviously that is drastically different than what I'm doing now. I was in the Army. But even if I was doing something in the realm of what I studied at university, which was systems engineering, I know that I would be likely depressed. I would not feel fulfilled. I would not feel alive. And I get to have incredible, deep conversations on a variety of topics that I'm interested in and make a living and help impact other people's lives. I don't know of many things that are better than that.
Exactly, exactly. So I just wanted to let people know before we go any further, I've got a nice list of questions here. I never did ask you about your time frame. So if you feel to let me know in the private chat, then I can make sure to work within that. And we are live to Facebook and YouTube and X and Rumble. And I have been officially kicked off Rockfin, as of many of my colleagues. So
you were kicked off of Rockfin?
Yeah. Yeah. Got an email. Yeah. They're probably tanking. So they're trying to get rid of, and the reason was because I didn't charge for my streams. I just wanted to be free for everybody. Yeah, yeah. And Marty Leeds was kicked off, and I think Topher, and if I'm getting it right, was Chance. I think Chance was kicked off as well. So whole
slew of us.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're trying to find a graceful way out, which it's not graceful at all. I also am uploading this to all of my podcast channels, so you'll find it on Spotify and iTunes as audios and a whole slew of other links there that you can find in the show notes here. And you can reach Alec at The Way Forward, spelled as it is on the banner here. And you can also find him at the end of COVID's, or however we want to talk about that. On Instagram, a real rock star over there. I am always amazed every single one of your posts and your tweets end up really far and wide reaching people. So that's very impressive. I don't know how you do it. And I'm just cheering for you in the background.
Thank you, Beth.
Yeah, yeah. And then the shenanigans of 2020, right? Like, how many of us can actually sit here in this moment and feel gratitude for that? How it shook us up, how it made us think in absolutely new ways, how it positioned many compasses to truth. And that's what we're talking about today, the truth at all cost, right? Friends, family, way of life, things that are familiar, the losses were huge. But when truth becomes the number one, and truth and freedom to me are the same thing, then all kinds of incredible, miraculous things can start to happen in your life. And that's what I'm a stand for. So let's see where we jump in. If I got you to do my archetype quiz before you joined, and I noticed that came through. What was your archetype?
Yeah, I got it right here. So the Awakened Warrior.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, beautiful. I definitely see that on you. When I was going through your extended bio yesterday, I was reading The Warrior. I was absolutely reading The Warrior. So I'm not surprised to hear that at all. That work is unpacking like crazy. I started out with 8 archetypes, and I had a download about 4 weeks ago. I had to stay up all night seeing how each one of those archetypes unpacks into a number of archetypes. So they are a very large category, which catches a lot, including the athlete, which you very much have, not just in your sports background, but in the way that you live your life and you run your world and, use every possible second.
Yeah.
Although that's partly king too. There's a lot of king on you at the same time. So that's really fun. And we can listen for other signs of that warrior to come up. If anybody's interested in doing that quiz and hasn't done it yet or hasn't done it recently, I'm going to share a link in the chat here. And you can also find that in the notes below. It's kind of fun. You take 10 minutes and find out where on the path of purpose you are. And you can get some insight about what's holding you back from what you want and need to be doing. By the way, Alec, it's a package deal. So you can't just have the Awakened Warrior. You also get the Shadows.
Yeah. I saw that and that resonated so much. The Shadow Warrior struggles to be disciplined, consistent, and strategic in their dealings. They resist the unconquered territory within and let it stop them from self-actualizing to their next level. So funny, because a really good friend of mine here in Austin was reflecting to me, and like, I'm fully transparent on this shit, and I will be always. He was like, dude, he knows the depth of my story. Like, I'm talking, the one that you read is the Instagram abbreviated version. And even that's like, oh, this dude has been through some stuff. And again, like, I'm not wanting a woe is me pity party, none of that. It's just, that is the context for where I came from, for who I am. He knows the depth of my story. And he was like, how do you do what you do? Like, how do you do what you do? And I was like, dude, I'd be lying if I didn't have that I'm aware of this, like, not festering. I don't want to call it that. It's not like destructive necessarily. Untapped well of anger and how do I put this? Just a more deeply rooted, grounded, gritty masculine piece inside of me that is untapped. And I'm aware of that. And I think, like, I was reflecting to him that I've not had a shared sort of community space with other men. Like, I've done men's work things, but I'm talking about like a real shared space where you get together with a group of men to really reach that untapped side of you. Because how that side of me used to come out when I was younger is I would get in fistfights at bars. I would see one of my friends getting pushed or something like that. And then I would immediately use that as an excuse. And it was absolutely an excuse to let out my pent up rage and anger and, you know, masculine drive, willpower, whatever you want to call it. And go headbutt a guy that just pushed my friend or like beat the shit out of someone in a bar. And that very much was how I used to be. And I've sort of, like, I won't say fully suppress that, but I've just, there's positive elements to that, that I've not really dived into, if that makes sense. And I would say that it kind of scares me, because I was always fearful of that very thing, both in myself and in others, because that's what I was exposed to so much when I was younger. Like, I was exposed to a lot of physical stuff that I would never wish upon anyone. And I've never projected that onto my kids ever. I never would. but I was exposed to it. And so it's inherently scary for me. But there's an element of that that is also very powerful, that makes you a little bit more assertive and makes it so people look at you like, man, that is a powerful, powerful man right there. And not that that's the reason that I would do it, but it's that I have not fully integrated that piece of me, I would say. And that's a work in progress, let's say.
The whole life. I keep telling people the whole life. Yeah.
Yeah.
And since you know my son Liam, as a mom when he was growing up, say we'd be on a street somewhere and we'd be walking and it'd be a little edgy, like, oh darn, I wish the car wasn't parked so far away. He would go into warrior mode and he'd be like, I'll just kill anybody who comes by me. And, he's got into the guns and the guitars and the knives and become a really masculine now 18-year-old. And there was a time where I was like, oh, darn, he likes the guns. And that doesn't, before I was definitely more awake to things. But I thought, you know what, just let the kid have his interests, whatever they are. I just kept allowing it. And now I couldn't be more grateful to have a protective son. Mm-hmm. And his first name means protector. I didn't mean to do that. His dad named him.
That's amazing.
It really is. It really is a beautiful thing. And when you told me about your background in the bar brawls, my mind immediately went, I want that guy on my team. Right?
That's, I appreciate that.
Yes. Yes. To have that capacity. It's, so many men have been demasculated and it's gone from them. So that's the whole point of this King Hero's Journey podcast, to highlight the strong men, to show that this still exists. And it's not gone the way of the dodo by any stretch of the imagination. And there's all kinds of things that can be done to foster it. So it is a gold mine to look right. Into that shadow or gift, right? You're going to find a lot of goodness for yourself and for others. So
yeah. And I'll say that, just to comment on that, like, I know with certainty, because there has been times this has happened, like when I was living in Oklahoma, 2021, we were living next to meth dealers and there were shots fired outside our house all the time. And there was one time where I walked over there and I'll give the less adult version of it. But I was like, if you ever lay a hand on any of my family members, I will kill you. Like, I will kill you. I'm not playing around. This is no joke. I will kill you. I know I seem like a run of the mill white boy. That ain't it. I will kill you. But that side of me only comes out in protective modes. I still think there's an element of that that needs to be integrated on a daily basis, because I feel myself leaning more towards, and this can be very good too, and I guess it just depends on the situation, depends on the context, but like speaking much more softly, much more clearly, coming from the heart, but there's heart grounded with a male sort of assertiveness that is a good mix that I think I sometimes fail to fully integrate.
Right. Well, you have your eye on the exact target. So yeah. speaking to warrior language, one more thing I wanted to shout out to Liam, that the intro to the podcast is him playing. And he has a YouTube channel out there. I'll grab the link later and share that. It's part of our deal that he does intros for me and then I promote him. So.
That's epic.
Yeah, pretty fun. I'm a proud mama. And so I think we've already got into this question, but we can see if there's anything deeper in it, that how, or is there anything more? How did your life shape and prepare you for what you're doing right now? Are there other ways that you haven't already talked about?
I mean, I would say like one of the big themes that comes up for me is the tendency for people in the health freedom space to remain within the Cartman drama triangle of persecutor, victim, hero, and looking at themselves as a victim and looking at they as the persecutor, and then also looking at the flip side of that, some hero to come save them, where they're outsourcing their power continually. And I think that the shadow side of the more black-pilled crowd is to subtly remain in that victimhood state while sharing what may seem on the surface empowering sentiments, but by constantly drawing attention to and focusing on what, quote, they are doing, even to the degree that they are doing this and they're also trying to manipulate us here with all these people that are co-opted, which may or may not be true. But in doing that, especially exclusively, you're continuing to outsource your power to and apply and project power onto those figures, when in reality, they're just men and women. Like, at the end of the day, they are men and women. And I'm sure that because they are likely, well, I guess I'd say they're likely acutely aware of the human psyche and consciousness and our ability to orient our thoughts and feelings individually and collectively and point it towards something, that we can create a sort of energetic distortion and egregore, as you know, a lot of people will call it, or just continue to project our foundational beliefs to apply power to some of these people, even like Trump and Elon Musk. And I'm not saying that they are not doing things that I would disagree with, nor that I don't ever comment on them. But the degree to which we focus on that is also disempowering us at a certain point, in my opinion. And I think I sort of came to that conclusion when, through doing the work to heal a lot of what I was subject to when I was a child, I got to a point where some of my family members who were subject to the same thing were just perpetually talking about it, like all the time, to the point that they had formed an identity around it. And I see the clear difference in my life versus their life and how they carry out their life. And it just shows me the importance of, okay, I can recognize on one hand that I have been victimized, as have many people in this space. That's what woke a lot of us up, is we ourselves were victimized at one point, or we watch a family member of ours become victimized. Recognizing that, holding that, while also recognizing that, okay, what am I going to do about it now? Is constantly pointing to the fact that I was victimized, is that serving me right now in any way, shape, or form? Maybe for a time it is. Maybe it's helping you to transmute what you're going through internally, dealing with those emotions. But I think it comes a point where that's actually no longer serving you anymore at all. And it's actually limiting you from fully stepping into your own power and taking control of your own life.
Yeah.
And the other piece to that, and this one's a really tough one, because there's a lot of dark stuff happening in the world. But there always has been, at least as far as I'm concerned. I can't think of any time in, whether it's the mainstream recorded history or alternative versions of history, of which there are a variety of ones that I always entertain because they are always really interesting. I can't think of a time in history that there wasn't some evil stuff going on in the world. That's always going to be happening, in my opinion. I actually think it serves a purpose. And the purpose is, you can recognize the evil that's going on and use it as an opportunity to transmute and step into your full power, your full potential. Create something that you want to create because you have bear witness to the darkness that's going on individually and collectively. So then you step into something more beautiful. And the big piece of that is getting to a place of forgiveness. And that is tough when it comes to someone like, let's take the worst example, Jeffrey Epstein, Bill Gates, like Klaus Schwab, all these people. But the more, in my own experience, the more that I avoided forgiving the individual who perpetrated a lot of very harmful behaviors towards me, the more that I perpetuated my own suffering. And the more that I stepped into a place of genuine forgiveness, which required that I really looked within internally and dealt with all of the rage, the anger, the guilt, the shame, the unworthiness, and all of those things, finally got to a place of, you know what? I don't necessarily want to be around that individual, maybe. I may never talk to that individual again, but I can see why, based on what they were exposed to when they were little, of which I had the awareness. I'm not saying that we know with certainty what Bill Gates, Epstein, and people like this were exposed to when they were little, but you can probably guess, based on what they were exposed to and based on their lack of willingness or lack of ability to look into these things because maybe they didn't have the tools, I can understand why, although not condone, I can understand why they perpetuated what they did. And you know what? I can have compassion for that and I forgive them. And the moment that I did that with this particular individual, I'm not kidding, I've shared this a number of times on my podcast, that individual called me and I had not spoken to him in 4 years. That individual called me and apologized for everything that he had ever done to me. Once I got to a place of forgiving him and here without ever even telling him. And that then facilitated the ability for me to step into my own power and also took the heaviness off of me and what I was experiencing internally, but also allowed space for him to step into doing the work, so to speak. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen to Bill Gates, Klaus Schwab, and all these people. That's not what I'm saying, but you never know. But irrespective of that, it's not focusing on the outcome of that occurring. It's recognizing that, yes, they did some very evil things, but it was an incredible gift for us to step into our own power. And the more that we can recognize that gift that they gave us and really say thank you for that gift that they gave us, even if it was incredibly hard to deal with, even if it was incredibly traumatic for people, even if some people died, unfortunately. But that's a whole nother piece. I don't believe that death is an actual real thing, but we can set that aside. But even if that occurred, we can also see that this was an incredible gift. And if we can find true forgiveness in our heart for them, it allows us to focus on that which we want to create now that we are aware and stop focusing on what, quote, they are doing, continuing to give them more power in our current life here in the present moment for what has occurred previously.
Amen. That's amazing. There's so many things I want to respond to in there. Just back to the, as you described it so well, the victim predator, I also call it predator prey. And with that hero in the mix there, it's a pendulum and it swings. It's actually the masculine feminine as well. And it's very easy to get stuck on that pendulum going back and forth. I'm the victim. And guess what? You turn into the predator. We all know that the abused people become the abusers. And then you search outward for that hero and you forget that you're, as Paul said, you're the hero in your own journey. No one gets out of that. It is absolute given. And but the identity, you get so stuck in it. You've placed your eye there, which has no place in the changing, moving world. Your eye is the absolute. It's the thing that doesn't actually change. And I just wanted to address this because you hear it so much in the New Age world, which I have a lot of beef with, is, it was meant to be. You know, my client just said, I lost my keys. It was meant to be that I could do all this deep inner work so that I can see how to leave Nicaragua now. She's in a little bit of a pickle. And it's not meant to be that it's so powerful. It's that you made it powerful, that you chose to turn that absolute wrong into something of value for yourself and for everybody around you. So it's an opportunity, not a given. And the last thing I want to say is about forgiveness. So I've done a lot of thinking around this. All of my healing has resulted in forgiveness. I actually had a recent experience. I wanted to talk to you in private about it because it's not something I want to be public. But I went through a very horrendous experience this year. I got taken advantage of. It was a very big financial hit. And it devastated me. And I went through months of healing around it. And just before I left for Acapulco, I found another shred of pain in the process. And I just sat down like a warrior and I went, okay, that's it. I'm going for the last of this, whatever it is. And on the other side, felt incredibly free, felt no animosity, no, you know, bad feelings of any kind, which was miraculous. And then when I was away, some retribution happened. And, you know, a shred of repentance that I didn't expect anymore. I wasn't waiting for it. It was something. It wasn't all a thing. But so forgiveness is something. If anyone has trouble forgiving, I say it is not a technique. It's a result.
Yes.
It's a result of healing. You can't go and fake forgiveness because that's the problem that people want to put it on, you know, put the cherry on the top of the shit. And it's like, no, doesn't work. It's not.
I've tried that. And like, oh man, I have, that's why I qualified what I was saying about forgiveness, which requires that you deal with what is present. It's very new age-esque, like, oh, it's all love and light. I forgive you, brother. Like that does not work. That's not a thing. That's not real. It's actually, you're lying to yourself.
Exactly.
There's a phase where you're not feeling like you should forgive that individual. But in my experience, it is only best that that is a phase, because the more you stick in that, again, it comes to a point where you're only perpetuating your own suffering and continuing to project more power onto the individual that harmed you. And the other thing is that thing that occurred, maybe the residual effects of it are still there, but the occurrence of that incident or maybe series of incidents are no longer here right now in the present moment. The only thing that is in the present moment is your feelings associated with it, which you can't bypass. You have to deal with them. And your thoughts related to it. And you have to deal with those first. And just like you said, forgiveness is the result of that. And it takes time. It takes time depending on, you know, the circumstances.
You got it. Yeah, that's amazing. So many good people are coming today, Alec. I'm really happy to show all of their comments. Thank you for that. I am unstoppable. It's true. And I think I'm in good company here around that. And so what a great answer to that question. Do you want to describe the moment where you pivoted from a more mainstream perspective to pulling back the curtain and allowing yourself to see things you hadn't seen?
Yeah, I mean, it was a series of moments. So like I shared at the beginning, it started with watching my mom and also my wife respectfully begin to heal things that the mainstream allopathic system had said they would always struggle with. And my mom was on her deathbed. We were looking at permanently institutionalizing her. She had multiple suicide attempts in and out of psych hospitals. My wife, again, we got married in 2016 and we had been dating since 2008. Entire time that I had known her, she was chronically ill on multiple immunosuppressive drugs under the care of multiple rheumatologists who basically said, you'll always be like this. You'll just have to manage this pain, which led to her being on drugs, which led to side effects, which led to more drugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then watching them drastically begin to heal those things that these various so-called experts had said they would always suffer with was a huge point of cognitive dissonance for me. And I will say this, I would be lying if I said there wasn't always a piece of me that felt different than other people, both in terms of life experiences. For example, I grew up around primarily the African American community, and that community is overwhelmingly exposed to a lot of trauma, let's say. I couldn't relate to a lot of my friends because I'm not black. Like, I'm not. That's just the reality. But then the suburban white kids I grew up near, they didn't deal with the home environment that I was dealing. So I also couldn't relate to them. So I felt different in that respect. So I always maybe thought outside the box. But also just from a young age, I remember looking up on Ask Jeeves when I was younger, before there was Google and things like this. I feel like I'm not from here. What does that mean? Or I feel like I'm from somewhere else. What does that mean? Like, didn't have the words to really articulate how I felt inside, but that I just like felt different. And I always sort of saw the world a different way. So I will say that that is a piece of it. But then that really broadened as these events happened in my life. And the other thing, this is pretty funny about me. So I think it's a product of both being of Serbian descent, and Serbians overwhelmingly are very anti-authority, but also growing up in the home environment that I did, that when I was a cadet at West Point, our total class rank is an accumulation of 55% how academically proficient we are, 30% how militarily proficient we are, and 15% how athletically proficient we are. Athletically, I was one of the top in my class. Academically, I was middle of the road, which is good in terms of those standards and like the mainstream, because it's one of the top public institutions in the United States, which means nothing, by the way. I want to emphasize that means nothing. Militarily, I was one of the worst in my class by far. Like, I have never been good with being obedient to authority, ever. And I've also, in many parts of my life, been fearful of authority at the same time because of the dynamics that I was exposed to when I was younger. Now, like, that being said, those are all the things that sort of led me to be who I was. But then after seeing those two experiences of my wife and then my mom begin to heal drastically, that just sent me down a journey of questioning everything. Like, soon after, my wife became pregnant with our first, which led to us, okay, they've lied about psychotropic medications. What else are they not telling us the truth about? Looking into these injectable things and realizing the problems there, which then inevitably leads to questioning the CDC, the FDA, which then leads to questioning the government itself, which then leads to me realizing, well, the Department of Defense is part of the government. I went to West Point. I'm a captain at the time, a lieutenant in the Army. What's going on here? Which leads to questioning 9/11, which leads to questioning the various wars throughout history, which leads to questioning really all of it. And questioning my own identity quite a bit too. A lot of questioning my own identity, especially from 2017 through 2019, I had the opportunity to be a part of the U.S. Army World-Class Athlete Program, where my job in the Army, luckily, was just to train as an athlete, like separate from the Army, not wearing uniform, training at an Olympic training center, playing professionally in Germany. And that afforded me the opportunity to really remove myself from the herd and the herd mentality of being in it in the Army and reflect on what I'm doing, what's going on, what I'm a part of. And I'm really grateful for that. And I've never served in combat. I can't imagine having to deal with the cognitive dissonance of that. I have several friends who have admittedly killed tens, hundreds of people as Apache helicopter pilots. And I just can't fathom having to reconcile that, because they did enter the military for what they thought were noble causes. And you can't knock them for that, but it's just a tough one. Anyway, I don't know if that even answered your question. I think it did in part.
Perfectly. Perfectly. Yeah. Amazing answer, actually. That's beautiful. Those turning points are so poignant for others to hear, because we're all looking for our point of pivot, even if you don't know that you are. And so, those turning points that you mentioned, they're amazing. Very much answer the question. So now you've chosen a role for yourself that has invited a lot of conflict and division. And I've been on the sidelines seeing that. And you chose debunking germ theory as a hill to die on from the looks of it. And, I never thought I would have a hill to die on that wasn't my work. And recently I just wanted to give you kudos for having introduced me through your podcast to the most influential person in my life that has now given me another thing that I want to champion to the end of the earth, and I'm willing to go to conflict with it already. I'm going to shout out to him, Dr. Garrett Smith. He's actually hosting me for a live stream tomorrow on his channel to talk about the parallels between our work. I have received immeasurable benefit. Many people, I run into your people in his world that are also getting the benefit. Many of my people are following along and able to, in 5 short months, I've got a list as long as my arm of testimonials that things have shifted and changed. So thank you.
That's incredible.
It really is. It really is. And he's like you. He's unstoppable. He's going to go to the end of the earth until it kills him, or he's, you know, whatever. I think we all die. No one gets out of here alive. Yeah. And so how do you handle the backlash and the attacks and the division, both from within and outside your community?
Ooh, that's a great one. I will say that my tendency is to struggle more with backlash I receive from within my community versus from outside of it. Like, I don't care when people call me a conspiracy theorist, a grandma killer, or even people who are groomsmen in my wedding, you know, say things related to thinking I'm crazy. It's when people inside of the community say things that I don't really struggle anymore, but I did previously struggle quite a bit. Because I think that's a result of growing up the way that I did. Like I said, not feeling like I could fit in fully with this crowd, but like longing to fit in with this community, not really feeling like I could fit in with this crowd, but longing to be a part of that as well, and feeling sort of out of place within both. I think that's the thing that I've struggled with primarily. Now, with that being said, is like, man, if you can really sit and honestly say that your intentions are good and you're on the pursuit of what is true, and you're just speaking authentically with compassion, with openness, and an understanding that you may come to a head where the current perspective that you have is no longer true, is you've come across evidence that it's no longer true. And as long as you have that as your North Star, I think that all of these things that people say are just noise. And it's also understanding that, like, on the internet, there are a lot of personalities that you could get lost forever. You don't even know if they're real people. They might be freaking bots or AI. You have no clue. And I think the internet has made it so people forget that there is another human being with their own story, with their own experiences, with their own conditioning that we all have on the other end of that screen. And when you can remember that, I think it makes you a little bit softer. And a lot of these people who say things, if you were to sit down with them face to face, not trying to change their mind, but just to have a conversation like, hey, here's where I'm coming from, and here's why I think what I think. And then really actively listening to figure out where they're coming from and why they think the way that they think. I think, man, a lot of this would fizzle out very, very, very fast. But we don't really do that anymore. And I think it's incredibly important that we are connecting in person with both like-minded community and people that might disagree with us on a variety of things. Like I just shared, I did a podcast with Benny Wills.
Right.
And yeah, it was great. It was awesome. And my neighbor, for example, not like-minded at all, not even a little bit. His wife is an allopathic medical doctor, and not like-minded at all. But we've become friends where we work out together in my garage gym and have deep, open conversations on a variety of things, just sharing our perspective. And you can see that, and this isn't the goal, that when you're not calling people sheep, calling people blind, othering them, but still taking a firm stance for your current perspective, you can see that there's shifts in how he thinks. like, he has Veda Austin's book in his house right now. And he's like, dude, this is blowing my mind. I'm like, yeah, exactly. Now think of the implications if we're all primarily made of water. Like, it's cool. But how I deal with it now is, overwhelmingly, I just don't engage when people give me crap, because I know who I am. I know people like you who I've met in person, and others who I've met in person who I have tremendous respect for. Also, you know, most obviously you don't know like the intricate details and how weird I am like when you're not there, but I've spent time with you in person. I'm pretty freaking weird. You could ask my wife. Like, very like, dude, if people saw how weird you were, they would be like, what the, anyway.
Me too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all kind of, but I think that like, I feel comfortable with who I am and my intentions, and I know where I've come from, and I know where I've been, and I know who I am today, and I can look in the mirror and say, damn, I am very proud of the man that I am. I'm very happy for the man that I am. And all these narratives, of which there's, you know, not many, but there's people who say things, and I'm sure you get that too, as any of us who have a public persona do. They don't know who I am, and that's okay. They have their own narrative in their head based on their own conditioning. That's okay. I can't change them. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. What if nature's intelligence could directly influence your physiology, helping to regulate your nervous system, sharpen your intuition, and shift your emotional state in a measurable way? For over 25 years, Lotus Way has been pioneering the use of flower essences, liquid infusions that capture the bioenergetic imprint of plants. Unlike essential oils, these remedies work on a vibrational level, interacting with your body's meridians and electrical system to promote clarity, resilience, and balance. Katie Hess, who I featured on episode 74 of the Way Forward podcast, has spent decades studying the effects of over 300 rare and powerful flowers, hand collecting them from across the world. The result? A line of elixirs, mists, and anointing oils, and even some chocolate, designed to shift your state of mind and body. Not through placebo, but through the subtle yet profound ways plant frequencies interact with human biology. I think flower essences are severely overlooked in the wellness space because it really is an incredible way to package up the wisdom and the innate intelligence of nature and deliver it to your body. And it brings your body back into coherence because it's tuning you on an energetic level like an instrument. So if you want to find which flower essences are right for you, you can take the flower quiz so you can see which ones match your current energetic state. As a listener of The Way Forward, you get an exclusive discount. Just use code ALEC10 for 10% off your first order. Or if you're the Way Forward member, get 20% off plus ongoing savings, and just reach out to us if you're a member and we'll get you your membership discount. Just go to lotusway.com/ALEC or just head to the show notes so you can experience one of nature's most powerful energetic remedies today. Most healthcare today operates on an outdated mechanistic model, treating the body like a battlefield rather than a self-healing system. You wait months for an appointment only to receive a rush diagnosis that labels you rather than truly understanding your unique health. Even in holistic health, many practitioners rely on endless lab tests and supplement protocols, addressing symptoms instead of the root cause. And the result? Another prescription or supplement regimen that merely suppresses or masks symptoms rather than facilitating true healing, whether the imbalance was physical, emotional, energetic, or a mix of all three. And that's why Dr. Tom Cowan co-founded the New Biology Clinic, to offer something radically different. As one of the most respected natural health doctors in the world, Dr. Cowan has spent decades challenging conventional medicine and advancing a deeper understanding of human biology, water, and natural health. His work isn't just about rejecting the mainstream. It's about offering a more truthful, biologically coherent approach for healing. The New Biology Clinic recognizes that health isn't about fighting disease, it's about restoring balance. You're not a diagnosis, you're an individual with a unique story, and healing should honor that. With virtual consultations available worldwide, the clinic offers a flat rate monthly membership that gives you direct access to practitioners who take the time to actually listen. Members also get exclusive health live streams, a resource library, and live sessions covering everything from biofield tuning and breathwork to movement and meditation, all designed to support whole body healing. And if you're not ready for a membership, you can book a one-time appointment, sign up for an enrichment-only membership for the healing modalities alone, or schedule a free connection session with one of the care team members to see how the New Biology Clinic can help in your specific situation. This isn't about keeping you dependent on doctors. It's about making you sovereign over your health. Head to newbiologyclinic.com and use code THEWAYFORWARD, and that's spelled the way, F-O-R-W-A-R-D, for $50 off account activation, or just head to the show notes for more info. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com for $150 off. Your body already knows how to heal, and New Biology Clinic helps you remember.
It's life is short, and you know that with the tasks that you've given yourself and the volume of that if you get stuck in every little conflict, then it eats your life and it's gone. So yep. You got to keep your eye, like you said, on that North Star. And so then I know you are sort of like a question I already know the answer to, but are there good times to create division? Because that became, you know, I was on that horse at one point, and I saw the war between the terrain and the germ theory people. And they would come and, you know, duke it out on my King Hero chat. And I would just be like, ugh, I already know that germ theory is fake and gay. And I already know that. And then what next? Like, what do we, you know, but they keep on warring it out and needing to be right and pointing this out and that out. And so do you think it's worth it? All of the division that's bloomed around that?
So to answer the first way you frame that question is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is do you think that there are times that it's worth it to create division, or it's like necessary to create division?
Yes.
If standing for what is true, a byproduct of that is that division is created, then yes. Now, there are ways to go about expressing what you have come to understand is true, that I will just share what my perspective is on that is, if your intention is to help empower people and to help people step into a less indoctrinated perspective and to take control of their own health, then there are ways to communicate this perspective that helps them step into that without making them feel stupid or denying their experiences that they've had, or you know, making it easier for them to approach questioning this whole paradigm.
Yeah.
And I think it's incredibly important to approach that in a way that you have compassion and understanding for people who have been incredibly indoctrinated. Because again, had I not seen my wife and my mom go through what they went through and then drastically reverse that, do I know with 100% certainty that I would have been able to see through the military grade propaganda that occurred over the last 4.5 years and beyond? I would hope so. I hope I would, because it was a pretty easy one this last time. Like, this one was like, this is like pretty obvious what's going on at the least at some level, but I don't know that. I don't know. So likewise, when it comes to people who are already on the health freedom side of things, there are understandable questions regarding what does cause two or more people to become ill in the same space that I don't know with certainty. And I think it's being able to say that, like, get people to understand that you can falsify one perspective without having a concrete answer of what does cause that phenomenon. And being able to authentically say, look, I don't know for sure what does cause that thing, but I have some ideas of what might cause that thing. I just know that if you look at the evidence, the so-called evidence for this specific paradigm, it doesn't hold weight when it comes to empiricism in accordance with the scientific method, nor logic. It's riddled with logical fallacies. Being able to communicate that authentically while also saying that, okay, now that that has been falsified, let's start looking at other possible explanations for this phenomenon. And if that way of communicating causes division, I think it's overwhelmingly that the people who feel like that is division oriented are so emotionally tied to their particular belief system that they won't entertain any other option. Or maybe, unfortunately, they've come across people who are incredibly aggressive in their language and attacking anyone, calling everyone who promotes the non-terrain perspective, promotes a germ theory perspective, controlled opposition. I do think some of those actors are, some of those figures are controlled opposition, to be clear. But when you give a like broad sweeping brushstroke that, oh, anyone who's promoting this is controlled opposition, it's just going to make the people who, let's say other larger figures who are not, like, maybe they know themselves, right? Let's put yourself in the mind of someone who has a large platform and simply has not explored this topic, right? And then they see a bunch of people asserting that they're controlled opposition because they have not looked at this topic. Do you think that's going to want to make them explore this topic?
No.
No, hell no. It'll be like, these people are nuts. They're saying on one hand, there's no evidence for this, but then they're making assertions that I'm controlled opposition. I know myself and I'm not. And again, I want to be clear. That does not mean that there aren't actual controlled operatives in this space. I'm just saying it's ironic when on one hand, we point to the lack of evidence for the field of virology or for the germ paradigm itself, and we're scrutinizing the so-called evidence that they provide. And then on the other hand, making these assertions regarding some of the people who don't approach this topic with a lack of evidence behind said assertions. So again, I don't know if that answered your question, but I think like if division is a byproduct of just speaking the perspective that you have authentically while holding space for the possibility that you might be wrong or there's more to uncover, while also putting yourself in the shoes of those who've not yet come across it, and I'm not perfect on this, if division is a byproduct of that, then it's good division and it's necessary because at the least, maybe it's forcing people into necessary cognitive dissonance. So that's my thoughts on that.
Brilliant. Polarity is very important and people shouldn't be afraid of it. And the way I think, I personally think the longevity that you've had with this topic is testament to the way that you've approached it. And, you know, when everybody started calling everyone a mass tard and you're stupid and what's wrong with you, I mean, I did that for 5 minutes. I thought that would work too. Didn't.
No.
It wasn't a match. But when you just come out and you say the truth and it's inciting because it's the truth, because it bumps up against somebody's existing belief system, it's okay. And that's, by the way, the rebel archetype that is okay with that, that you don't feel like every hit you take has anything to do with you, or it's, you need to project back on them or attack them and go to war with them when the real war is not with them. That's the part that we really get trapped in. And I can't help saying that, I did a study on the archetypes of controlled op last year, because I got tired of just always, you know, someone comes and posts David Martin on my thing and I have to go controlled op alert. And, you know, like it's actually become pretty beautiful on my Telegram. They don't post controlled op anymore, even if they're still taking it in or they're this or that, but they've learned that this isn't the place where we do that. Mm-hmm. That you know, I'm always going to call that out, and I know people think that, and I've been guilty of that too, where it's like, oh, germ theory, they must be controlled off.
I have too. I've been guilty of it too, but like I have to check myself if I'm holding, for example, virology or cell biology or astrology or any of these various so-called scientific fields to a certain standard. Then I better be using that exact same standard in my own life when looking at other narratives, other ideas, other possible people, public figures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not to say that I can't have ideas and say, I think this person might be, but I don't know for sure. Or I have questions about this individual, but I don't know for sure. I'm talking about the assertions, like making assertions that are in some cases wild, like based on literally zero, or if anything, like very limited evidence, right? That's the issue. And I think that a lot of people do that. And one more piece too, is the tendency as human beings, because we want to be with community, like we want to fit into tribes,
yeah,
which then leads to tribalism in a lot of ways, is an inevitable byproduct of that, where we have mistaken our own identity for that which we've come to believe. Yeah. And we're all subject to that, where we will defend something not because we've come to perceive at this point in time that it is likely true, but because we have taken a literal identity and shrouded who we truly are with that identity. And when that identity is attacked, we mistake that for the very essence of ourselves being attacked. So rather than listening for something that, you know, someone may be presenting something that's like, oh, this is another way to look at something, we mistake it as ourselves, our very essence, our life being attacked because we've mistaken that for our identity. So that's another thing that we, I think, in this truth or health freedom space need to be cognizant of and aware of, our tendency to do that as well.
Yeah, you nailed it. It is the identification with it that feels like they're trying to kill me when they criticize germ theory.
Yep.
And that, it's like, yeah, that's it. All the problems in the world are a case of mistaken identity. I'm very, very clear about that. And have some good tools around it as well. So here's another hill I'm willing to die on. I was traveling to an Acapulco, and the first thing, I'm trying to leave Canada in Winnipeg. We have an American border crossing right in our airport. And so I politely come up to the man at the desk and I say, I'd like to opt out of the facial recognition camera. And oh my goodness, he got so mad at me and started firing all the questions at me. And then they detained me. They took me off into the room, which it had already happened. And I didn't think anything wrong would happen because they just chatted with me and let me go on my way last time.
It happen when you were coming to see me and Luke for my podcast?
I think so. No, yeah, I was already having trouble. I've got a flagged passport. I've got issues. Yeah. And I've had most of my trouble actually with the Canadian guys, not the Americans. Americans have always been easy with me, but all of a sudden, is it because of the tariff wars and they're encouraging hate, speaking of division?
Right.
Because I got treated so badly by the American guards this time. And so the guy ended up threatening me, you're going nowhere if you don't fingerprint right now. Wow. So I got treated like a criminal, and now I'm on the record, not with a crime, but, you know, and I tried to have some sense in the conversation, like, oh, it's to identify you. And it's like, well, you can't identify me because I've never been fingerprinted before. We'll see. And then I asked him after, I'm like, this is the first time this has ever happened to me. Why is this happening now? And he goes, oh, well, I didn't have to do that. I had the choice like this. And I'm like, oh, good to know you got that karma on your hands now. Yeah. Thank you very much. Right. It was a very stressful start to the trip. And so I posted about it after, and I was already starting to feel not well because of the stress, like, you know, they put you through it. Mm-hmm. And then I guess it was actually another post, and I started to say, I think I'm coming down with something. Well, what happens in that moment is people start recommending ivermectin to me. And I already have learned how incredibly dangerous this drug is. And I had been aware of, now my natural health food group is selling it.
Oh,
and
my,
and the local herbalist that I have the most respect for ever was recommending and selling it. And that, and methylene blue, which is going off the charts in the alternative world.
I was just talking to friends about that literally today. One of our friends was like, wait, you don't like methylene? I'm like, no, I don't. Absolutely not. It's like, it's a weird thing here in Austin where in many spaces, it's almost assumed that you like methylene blue. I'm like, what? It's wild.
Yeah, it's a complete psyop. It's extremely dangerous. And, you know, we think that us in the natural health world, and I'll say natural health world because it's really, you know, it's actually more psyoped than the mainstream.
More. In many ways, yeah.
I'm learning every single day, uncovering a new nugget of how, you know, like even the everyone thinks that carrots are good for their eyes. Well, that was a World War II psyop.
Interesting.
They were trying to kill the vision of the enemy who was flying in the dark. So they started promoting carrots and vitamin A as a mechanism, and it worked. And it's stuck for generations now, where people still think that that's a health food.
Interesting.
And there's all the proof and the evidence and the papers and the little memes of propaganda that they made at that time. So
did you learn that from Garrett?
Yes.
I don't remember him saying that particular piece. He spoke carrots, but I don't remember him saying that on my show.
It's new. It's new research that he just I'll shoot you a link after. Okay. So that was really awakening. And so I'm so glad to hear that you're awake to these, I just can't say enough, dangerous drugs, and I'll leave that alone right now. But
I remember being at Anarchapulco last year, and I won't name names, but an individual, a friend of one of the individuals that was there speaking, came up to me and offered to set up my Telegram channel to push ivermectin, not knowing that I have very strong opinions on ivermectin, just like you do, and indicated that he has friends who are big names in the health freedom space who have made hundreds of thousands of dollars pushing ivermectin.
Of course.
And I was, it was really shocking to hear and also really kind of gross. And again, I have compassion for the people who just have not done their research on that, who have fallen into the false dilemma. So, the shots are bad, but in order to combat this so-called virus that they have still assumed exists, whether, you know, most of these people are buying into the idea that it came from a lab, which is also nonsensical. We need this other thing that has been, quote, suppressed, this idea that this product has been suppressed, but it's just a false dilemma. If there's no particle that is being transmitted from person to person, then why would you need either of the two ever? And also, there's pretty clear evidence at this point that ivermectin is known to cause fertility issues in the long term in both men and women. And I think the account, if I remember correctly, is Tim Truth, who's done a pretty good deep dive, and also Steve Falconer has as well, on ivermectin in particular. But it's another toxic pharmaceutical product.
Exactly. And it's the duration paradox, where people get results, they feel better right away because it shuts the detox down.
Yep.
That's why. But you're going to get sick again, and it's a bomb waiting to go off.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. If we can learn anything from what's done in culture, in the cell culture, so-called isolation techniques, it's that when cells are starved and poisoned, they experience cell injury or death. And the resultant particles are mistaken to be, quote, viruses, and are mistaken to be the cause when they are simply the byproduct of being starved and poisoned. So if you're taking a product that is known to, quote, stop the replication of the virus, essentially what they're saying there is it's stopping the detox reaction that is occurring after being starved and or poisoned. And that's exactly what ivermectin and some of these other products that are pushed, like hydroxychloroquine, which, by the way, when we tapered my wife off all of her drugs that she was on for her, quote, autoimmune conditions, one of the drugs that we found to be incredibly toxic that we tapered her off of was Plaquenil, which is hydroxychloroquine, which has also been pushed as this way to, quote, combat SARS-CoV-2 and the C word. And again, all it's doing is limiting or hindering your body's ability to express toxicity, which is exactly what your body is designed to do when it's healing.
Yeah, you said it in a nutshell. Thank you. Thank you for being a voice of reason. I was glad to, you know, Anarchapulco did have the ivermectin pushers, but it also had a lot of very lucid people who were willing to stand up. So I was grateful.
Thank God Andy Kaufman was there, for example.
Yes, that's his main one there. Exactly.
I actually saw there was something pretty interesting that happened last year, where Andy and this other individual were sitting next to each other, and Andy had just was losing his voice, just from talking so much, I think. And that individual offered him ivermectin, and Andy responded, "Get that fucking poison away from me." And I was just like, yes.
Right on. There's a quotable quote. Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's a depopulation agenda. It's the fertility is the main thing that's under attack right now. So, yeah, like you said, you know, the cells are, what did you say, poisoned and starved.
Yeah.
That's us. That's us, poisoned and starved. We have our work cut out for us like no other generation has. Don't point to other generations what they could do as if that should be right for us. They got away with it.
Yeah.
Right. We're now weakened. Babies are born jaundice with damaged livers. It is a totally different game for us. So if you don't think that, I know that I'm not talking to you, I'm preaching to the choir, but if you don't think it takes extreme measures to heal right now, it does. And it's just the reality of it. So very good. I can't help myself. Can we talk about David Martin? I had somebody championing for him the other day. And then I saw one of my favorite podcasters. I love him like anything, but he was, "Oh, I'm with the hero." And I know you did a fabulous job debunking him.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. So first thing that I want to say very clearly is I can speculate all day on someone's intentions, motives, their relationships, dealings, and stuff behind the scenes. And to some degree, that is helpful because you can come to learn that some of the primary figures in the health freedom movement do not have your best interest in mind. Now, with that being said, to make assertions regarding this person being this, I'm not one to do that because I can't say that I know with 100% certainty. Like I really can't say that I know with 100% certainty. Now, with that as context, when it comes to David Martin. So David Martin, for those who don't know, and I'd be surprised if anyone doesn't know who he is by now, he's the bow tie guy that was featured in Plandemic 2, which is one of, if not the most viral docu-series that has ever existed. And in that, he discussed patents related to the alleged particle that people assumed came from a lab and was transmitting from person to person. And he has spoken a number of times in public referring to this thing as if it is real, like a number of times. One of which, in the last 2.5 years, he spoke in front of some people from the European Parliament. And it went pretty viral on the internet. And it was him discussing the patents associated with this supposed particle and how incredibly dangerous this research is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Speaking about it as if it is a real thing, an actual thing in reality. But the language that he was using sort of led me to question whether he knows what is true with respect to this particle. I'm trying to be like careful with my word choice to not flag any of the YouTube or anyone else, but I hope people are picking up what I'm putting down.
I am.
Yeah. Okay. I know you are. I just hope the audience is. If people comment like, "I have no clue what you're talking about," please tell me so I can refine my language a little bit better.
All right.
So there was a couple things that he said in that speech to the European Parliament, and he had done this a number of times, where he will say viral model rather than virus, viral model. And the way he said it within the context of the sentences that he was using led me to question whether he actually believes what he's saying fundamentally, and also question whether he might know the truth regarding the pseudoscience and fraudulent nature of the field of virology. So another piece of context is up to that point, I had reached out to him a number of times to have him on my show. And in every case, I got a message from his wife, Kim, saying that he's not available. But then I would see him go on shows that have, and I don't care about this, but I'm just like the context, shows that have audiences much smaller than mine. And it's not that like, oh, I'm someone that he needs to come on my show because my audience is bigger, but to say that he is not available and doesn't have the time, but then appear on a variety of podcasts over the course of nearly 2 years that clearly have audiences smaller than mine was really peculiar. So after this speech that he delivered at the European Parliament, and it was shared by Kim.com, who is like millions of followers on Twitter, and a bunch of other people who were sharing it to lend credence to the idea that there was a lab-made particle being passed from person to person, which is incredibly harmful. Because just to give a little bit more context, then I'll get into the conversation that I had with David. Which of the two sounds scarier and has more potential to be weaponized through fear-based propaganda? The idea that a particle jumps from a bat to a pangolin to a woman eating bat soup, and a one in a gazillion chance, off chance, that happens when human beings come into contact with wild animals. Or the idea that those naturally occurring things are being weaponized in a lab under very suspicious motives, and the intention is to create a much more dangerous, more lethal version of what is, you know, occurring naturally. Now, to be clear, neither of those are true or proven. In fact, in many ways, this paradigm has been thoroughly falsified. But I think it goes without saying that the latter perspective is much, much more fear-inducing. And that is the message that the overwhelming majority of the, quote, health freedom movement is adopting, not only adopting, but championing and shouting from the rooftops.
Exactly.
Which is incredibly dangerous as we move into the future. And another piece of that is, if we're constantly pointing to all of the things that have been established upon the inherently flawed, fraudulent, and pseudoscientific foundation of virology, pointing to the shots, pointing to masking, pointing to health protocols, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, yeah, without addressing the foundational fraud, that is allowing more of this stuff to continue. I'd also add another piece of that is continuing to believe that men and women who call themselves government have any moral rights to give commands, give dictates, and use aggression against those who don't comply. That's another piece. But in addition, like a perfect example of just focusing on those things while failing to address the root, how many birds, cows, and other animals have been senselessly culled over the last year, 2 years, 3 years, and especially over the last year because of, quote, bird flu? What is masking? What is drawing attention to the problems with masking going to do? What is drawing attention to the efficacy and dangers of shots going to do? I'm not saying that it's not important that we also do that, but if you're doing that without addressing the root, you're allowing this tree to continue to grow while you're just whacking at the branches. That's what's happening. So, with all that being said, I called David out because I said, it's interesting that you won't come on my podcast. I've asked you a variety of times and you're going on these other shows and you're pumping this very fear-based message, or at the least not correcting people when they lend credence to the idea that there is a particle that was made in a lab being transmitted from person to person. So he comes on my show and I was, I think I held my composure fairly well on screen.
It was epic. But
I was drenched. I was like drenched in my black t-shirt that I was wearing. Like if I was wearing a gray t-shirt, you would have just seen sweat stains all over me, because it was tense. It was really tense. And basically the whole conversation was me asking in a variety of ways, is there not this particle? and he would go off on a long diatribe or say, well, according to the definition that they give and according to their own paperwork legally, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, David, no, that's not what I'm asking, what they say. I'm asking, in reality, in actual reality, is there this thing? And it took 45 minutes of me asking a variety of ways for him to finally admit on my stream that there is not and never has been, to use his own words, a transmissible particle or virus passing from person to person. He finally said that on my stream.
I was jumping up and down for joy. Honestly, it was so painful to listen to it because he takes you in and out. He's a snake. He's like, you know,
sophistry. He's a master at sophistry.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Yeah. Sophistry, where you use like very advanced language that to the layman sounds, wow, like he is so incredible at speaking. I just don't really understand the concepts. I need to look into this more. This dude is brilliant, when he's really just like saying nothing with a bunch of big words.
Yeah. 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 No, I was grateful that you just dug right in there. I could not have had that conversation with him. And then you got the goods and created a beautiful little short. So yeah, I'll have to go and search those and reshare them. That they were epic.
Yeah. Thank you. And just one more piece of that is that so after he admitted it, I was like, thank you. And I said, don't you think it's important to clarify that publicly? And he was like, no. I'm like, why not? Like, given everything that I've already named on this show with you, why not? Like, why would that not be important? I think it is incredibly important. I think it is essential that you clarify what you mean publicly. And then he started to make claims about how he's attempted to use the no virus approach legally and it hasn't worked. And I, and then also Christine Massey, have asked him for evidence that he used that. And I've not seen any evidence that he's used that approach. And in fact, we know that Stefan Lanka used that approach in Germany and won. And we also know that Marvin Haberland, also another German guy, used that exact same approach, meaning used the foundational failure to adhere to the scientific method, failure to provide adequate evidence that these things exist or cause any illness, as a means to overturn some decisions in German court related to fines he received during the whole charade of 2020 through 2024. So that's just fundamentally not true. And what's also funny, around the same time, I know this is very long-winded, so I'm sorry.
I love
but
it.
Around the same time, Del Bigtree was receiving a lot of pushback from those of us in the no virus space. Some people, I agree, and it's really like smaller accounts on Twitter and elsewhere, were being a little bit too aggressive, but there were some of us who were just like, Del, we want to have this open conversation. Like, this conversation is important. You've only featured Andy Kaufman one time at the very beginning regarding this. And the only reason you featured him is because so many people in your audience were like, you need to have this guy on, that you really just couldn't, you know, ignore it anymore. And he comes out and says, and this is like 2.5 years ago now, around the same time of that David Martin interview I did, that, you know, this is at the start of the high wire. There's this conversation going on, and many of you have probably heard of it, like germ versus terrain. And then he said, we're going to get to that. But if what you want is for Anthony Fauci to walk off scot-free into the sunset, then keep on with that position, because that's what you're allowing by saying that there is no particle. If you're saying it's all fake, you're allowing people like Anthony Fauci and, you name some other people, Klaus Schwab, to walk off free when we're right about to move into indictments. It's been 2.5 years, Del. Has there been any accountability related to what you just said? No, none, zero. So it tells me that what you're referring to, whether you realize it or not, is total nonsense. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
The only way that this ends, in my opinion, this whole paradigm, is if we continue to calmly, kindly educate people and empower people to understand that there is no boogeyman particle floating about. And in fact, that's a distraction from the other many things that are actually causing your illness.
And the word means poison. That was our language, right? Like, come on, it's right there.
You know what's so funny about that too is like you could technically say in some cases they're not lying. It's just misleading because like when they say virus, like, yeah, there is poisons that are out there in reality.
It's the great poisoning. And I wanted to, you know, there's so many people that, and I'm hearing this right now. I posted about it RFK the other day. I couldn't control myself. It was, you know, because he's promoting the jabs for the measles and stuff and vitamin A, which is fascinating. Fascinating, because they're onto it now. And then, so the philosophy goes that we have to lie to help people. We have to lie to keep the influence so that they'll continue to be in power and be able to do all their good stuff. What's wrong with that theory?
Well, that, and the other side of that is, well, we have to lie because people aren't ready to hear it yet. So what you're admitting is that you are telling people a lie because you think people are too childlike to hear it yet. But at the same time, you're wanting to empower people to make their own health choices and decisions. And you want people to stop blindly outsourcing authority to other mainstream people. Those two paradigms are at fundamental odds with each other. We're adults. We can make our own health decisions. And if people don't want to step into their own power and make their own health decisions, that's their journey. And I'm not going to control that for people. But if you are treating people like children, saying that, well, they're not ready to hear this, that's absurd to me. Like, and in fact, it's incredibly harmful because you are perpetuating what is fundamentally a lie.
Exactly. And if you're defending people that lie, that's another level of a lie.
Yes. And this is where, like, I'll be totally honest, like my military mind comes in and I can see it from another perspective sometimes. And that's not saying it's correct. And that's also not saying this is what people like RFK are doing. I want to be very clear. Like, I've been pretty outspoken on the various statements made by RFK for a while now. Mm-hmm. And then, like, checking my own preconceived ideas, I sometimes think, like, well, is it possible that he's doing that so he can get his foot in the door and then change things? I don't think so, though. Like, I don't. But like, if I'm refraining from my own dogma and checking myself on my preconceived ideas, I have to be able to entertain all possibilities and then come to my own conclusion, irrespective of what other people are thinking. And where I stand now with RFK, Trump, that whole paradigm, what they're doing, like, if I am coming from the deep understanding that zero permanent solutions are going to come by way of mechanisms of government, one. Two, no man or woman, irrespective of their title, has any right to tell me or my family what to do. That's the second thing. If I'm coming from those foundations, I can also sit back and watch and celebrate what are objective things that are better than what was before, while also being incredibly skeptical and aware of they're likely doing those things in order to garner support from the people who don't understand the first two things that I named, that consider themselves to be freedom oriented, so that they continue to receive this blind obedience to the people who have bought into this false dilemma that, oh, Democrats bad, therefore this other side good. Oh, I'm freedom oriented. Other people are freedom oriented or going over to this side. I don't understand those first two things that I just named. These people are doing what is better than this side. Now I'm going to blindly latch on to outsource my power, form my identity around them, which is an incredibly dangerous position to take. But if you have the foundations for the first two things that I just named, I can sit back and watch and be like, damn, he's pumping the measles vaccine. Sorry, I said the V word. The measles thing. Hopefully you can edit that out later on. The measles product. That's a 180 from his position literally 6 months ago, a year ago. Also interesting, the sort of MAHA movement has been pretty much dead quiet on these products while focusing on things like Fruit Loops, which, like, okay, that's great. Of course, I want poisons to be taken out of our food, but I love people like Joel Salatin. For those who aren't familiar with him, he's a really big regenerative farmer in the US. And he's like basically saying, we are wanting to rely on, this is very paraphrased, we are wanting to rely on mechanisms of government for things that we can do ourselves in our own lives fundamentally right now, just by making our own decisions. Like, why do we need legislation to ban these various products or things that are in food? Why can't we all just collectively, who don't want those things, stop buying them and continue to educate people on, you have a choice to not buy those things. You also have a choice, no matter who tells you otherwise, to not receive that injectable product. You have that choice. You don't need government to come in. You don't need a savior in government to come in and do this. And with that being said, when Trump is talking about dissolving the Department of Education, I can celebrate that act in and of itself, while also recognizing that because the overwhelming majority of people don't understand the first two things I just said, don't understand the nature of the Hegelian dialectic, don't understand the Cartman drama triangle, don't understand a false dilemma, I can celebrate that objective thing. I'm not going to go wild over it, be like, oh, that's good. Department of Education, yeah, that needed to be gone a long time ago. And also be like, they're likely doing all these things to usher in a new technocratic AI-driven version of it. And I can watch more objectively, I would say. But it requires that you have the foundational understanding of the first two things that I just said. And how many people in the so-called freedom movement actually understand that to their depth? Very few.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things I've admired continuously about you, that you have applied your mind in an extraordinary way. And, you know, when 2020 hit, it made me realize that I had, you know, I was always in my lane, doing my work. I wasn't going to think about anything else. I, you know, just like stay out of my consciousness. And when I suddenly had to think about things like the law and health in from a new context, and I had to start learning, although I spent many, many hours learning a bunch of crap, I can't get that time back, but you know, that's how sometimes you have to get to that point to discern. But you have a very, very powerful mind in addition to your disposition of not causing harm unnecessarily to anybody that that might very well come around. So I just have a lot of respect for that, Alec.
Likewise, because I know you're very much the same.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I've learned more than I ever thought I would. And yeah, that's fantastic. That was a wonderful way to cover this subject as well that has been covered. And you know, there's lots, and I do recommend going, if you have any doubt whatsoever, please go back in Alec's archives and educate yourself. It's a great place to do that.
Yeah. For those that asked, the episode with David Martin, it's episode 40 of my podcast. So it's a while back, episode 40.
Okay. Wow. That was number 40. You were just getting started. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for doing all that sweating on behalf of all of us. It was painful to listen. I tell you, I'm just like,
It was so painful. And someone commented in the chat that, if they remember correctly, I had apologized for my lack of composure in the David Martin interview. Here, I'm trying to find it. Yeah, I did. I did apologize because I don't think that I held my composure well. I don't. And I still think that. Like, I could have done much better. You can have that perspective while also acknowledging that, in my opinion, he was behaving very slippery. He was not answering my direct questions, which led to me getting frustrated, which is my own stuff. And I could have done much better in that respect, but it can be both. It can be that, yeah, I didn't hold my composure well. Other people said I did. I'm like, I don't think I did. Say again.
It looked like you held your composure to me. So I'm not just blowing smoke up your butt.
No, I believe you, but you know, maybe I'm hard on myself, but I think I could have done better. But it was also an incredibly tense conversation. Like, man, no one has done that with him. No one.
Right.
I was the first one. And it's like, that is, it's really hard to do that.
It is. One of the things I wanted to talk about was podcasting in general and that role. You know, I've had people agree to come on. And then in the meantime, 27 people send me an expose on them and show them to be going sideways. And then I'm like, oh, do I cancel on them. They often cancel on me without even knowing. I don't say anything, yeah. but they suddenly turn away from me when I know. I had Chase Hughes agree to an interview, and then I came across the expose on that character selling methylene blue, and then he stopped responding to anything. And I didn't post against him. I didn't call him out, but somehow he felt it.
That I have compassion for, like, people can be promoting what are harmful perspectives unwittingly without knowing. Like,
it can be
right. Like, when it comes to Chase Hughes, I highly doubt, because I've also been messaging him too, and I could be wrong on this as well, but my perspective now is I highly doubt he's intentionally pumping methylene blue in a way to, like, maliciously get people to take what is, you know, I believe is poison. It's that, just like my friend texting today who has been taking methylene blue himself, he's like, wait, you guys don't like methylene blue? And I'm like, no, here's a whole thread. And I actually sent him Dr. Garrett Smith's thread on methylene blue.
Nice.
But it can be that people are unwittingly promoting something that is not good, and they just don't know any better. And that's where it's like, when we can refrain from immediately jumping to, oh, that individual's controlled opposition, and just say, well, maybe they're misled. Just like I have been misled on a variety of things over the last 4 years, and I've had to change my perspective. And when we can have that and hold that, it, I think, allows us to be a little bit softer in how we approach people. And, like, maybe my constitution is I like to be, give people the benefit of the doubt until they show me repeatedly that they can't be trusted. For a perfect example, Dr. Peter McCullough, despite seeing multiple things that he was sharing, was giving him the benefit of the doubt. Then I gave a presentation to this group called Medical Doctors for COVID Ethics. He was present during my presentation. He saw me go into the history of virology. I've seen, because I've been copied on other email chains, that he's been given a lot of the foundational problems with virology and the evidence associated with it. And then I see, 2 years ago, he went on this podcast called Man in America podcast, and said verbally, in response to the question, well, I just had Dr. Tom Cowan on my show. This is, I think his name's Seth, the host of Man in America podcast. I just had Dr. Tom Cowan, and he says that there is no evidence for the existence of these particles, blah, 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 blah. What are your thoughts on that? And then Dr. McCullough said something in the effect of, oh yeah, that's a, you know, fringe position that was started by this guy in Canada who was challenging the Canadian government. It's not to be taken seriously. It's not anything legitimate whatsoever. And in that moment, I'm like, this guy's a liar. He's literally a liar. He's lying right now. And I know he's lying because I know that he was at my presentation. I've seen the emails that he's been copied on. I know he's lying now. So in that instance, I now know that it's not that he might say some things that are objectively true, that I also, the statements themselves, agree with. But I look at Peter McCullough and I'm like, I don't want to give him the time of day, because now I have been shown that he's not someone that I can trust. And at the same time, could he regain my trust? Absolutely. Like, if he were to come out and be like, you know what, I was wrong about virology, then I'd be like, oh, okay, I see steps to make amends, essentially, in this case. So, sorry, that was very long-winded, but.
No, you want people to come around.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a very bad habit to demonize them and write them off, which I'm guilty of. I've done that. I turn away. I'm like, okay, you know, time's short. Let's pay attention to something that I know is real and valuable. And I can't help myself one more time about, I was brought to my attention that, Cowan has a tincture made of bugs now, and he's promoting bugs. And what do you think about
Dr. Cowan is?
Yes.
I don't know. I haven't seen this tincture. I'd be interested to see.
I'll show you.
And I love Tom, though. Like, I will say, my experience of Tom, like, I talk with Tom fairly regularly. And am I going to say that Tom's perfect? No. Have I probably promoted things myself that ended up being not so good? Yeah. Tom overwhelmingly is an incredibly deep thinker, and if he's promoting something that might be harmful, there might be more context that, again, I haven't seen it, then I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And he's just not done a deep dive or has not heard a counter perspective on this. But overwhelmingly, I find Tom to be an incredibly deep thinker and spot on. So
right on. You're not alone. Many people. It just kind of stuck out for me, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And then if you're interested in a really extensive expose on Chase, I'm happy to share that. I'm pretty sure I could find it again.
Okay.
Yeah. With a lot of good facts in there. So, let's see. How's your time, by the way?
I got
more questions.
20 more minutes.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. That's what I set aside as well. So who would you consider to be your mentors and guides on your hero's journey?
Oh man, I would say Dr. Edith Obuntu-Chan would be one.
Nice.
Dr. E is incredible. Dr. Tom Cowan, Dr. Andy Kaufman, Garrett Kramer. Who else? I'm going to feel bad if I don't name some people that are like fundamentally my mentors. Those four for sure. Dr. Jordan Grant. I cannot say enough positive things about that dude. In helping me refine the way that I think and the way that I look at the world and the way that I analyze people who make claims about things, the way that I analyze what I think I know myself, Dr. Jordan Grant has been one of the most influential people in my life by far. Like, yeah, that dude is next level. And he's like relatively unheard of because he's only will pop on Facebook to say something that's so mind blowing and then just leave for a while because he gets so frustrated with people who say these absurd things. I mean, there are so many other ones I could think of off the top of my head, but I would say those five have been the most impactful in my life off the top of my head right now. I'm sure there are others. But Dr. Jordan, Dr. Tom Cowan, Andy Kaufman, Edith and Garrett Kramer would be my, I think, top five mentors. Also throw in Eileen McCusick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked her. I just saw her with Marty Leeds the other day. That was fun.
Yeah. I love Eileen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. That's a great answer. And so do you consider us to be a movement? I know it's problematic. And where do you think it's headed?
Oh, man. It's hard not to say that there is, I would say, a community rather than a movement. Like there's an online and in some cases in-person community. I would say that I am attempting, as are other people, to champion a loose movement surrounding people who are trying to get back to a deep connection with nature and natural principles while also dissolving the illusion of authority, while also recognizing our inherent connection and interdependence with each other. Now that's a very loose movement. That's what the way forward is attempting to do, is attempting to help people, in short, remember who they are. That's it. But in terms of the health freedom movement, I don't even know what that means at this point, because that can mean anything from like, I believe just the C shot is bad, but all the other ones are good. And I love ivermectin and Pierre Corey and Dr. Robert Malone are gods to our perspective. Like, it's such a large spectrum. And at the same time, I'm appreciative of, in either case, at the least, overwhelming majority of people in that space are like, no one should be coerced into anything with respect to their own health decisions, which I really appreciate that. But the problem with labeling it the health freedom movement, as it's known amongst the overwhelming majority of the alternative crowd, let's say, is then accompanied with the belief that RFK is the leader of that. Callie and Casey Means are the leader of that. Robert Malone, Pierre Corey, Peter McCullough. And then it's also accompanied with blindly outsourcing to those people. And that's where I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm definitely not a part of that movement. Like, if that is an inherent aspect of the movement, and some people will say like, oh, these are the leaders of the health freedom movement, I'm not a part of that. Likewise, like, when it comes to being a quote truther, everything's a psyop, everything's controlled opposition, we're screwed either way. That's not a position that I want to buy into either. Like, do I agree that some things are psyops? Yeah, but I'm going to analyze on my own and critically think on whether it is. Do I agree that some people are controlled opposition? Yeah, I do. Do I agree that we are all screwed either way with this false dilemma? No, no, I don't agree with that whatsoever. Not at all. And like, so that's like the more black pill side of the truther movement. But like, that's why I don't like buying into movements. I don't. I just don't. Or even the consciousness movement, because that leads you to the position that everything is always love and light, that the body is something that you want to transcend. You start wearing mala beads after doing two ayahuasca ceremonies, and then like you wear your hair like a yogi, and then think that you are qualified to be a plant medicine facilitator after spending 1 weekend in Peru. Again, that's extreme, because there are some great people who have like spent extensive amount of time in Peru that I've received medicine ceremonies from that I'm like, yeah, you're awesome. But then they're, when you are part of that movement, that's what it can become. Like, I guess if I'm a part of any movement, it's a movement towards authentic self-expression, authentic self-actualization, and analyzing various claims and questioning, how do you know that? And also questioning how I know what I claim to know, and being a part of community that holds space for other people to do the same.
I love that. Well done on that question. It's a prickly one.
Yeah, it is. It's tough. Cause like, yeah, it's tough. Cause I do say that term, but I don't even know what to call it. It's like, this is the merger of the truther, health, freedom, consciousness, move, spiritual community movement, all kind of in one thing. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, the tribalism is always nipping on your heels there to become something that you're not in identity. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah. It all comes down to us. We're just always the hero on our journey, and that's it. You don't get out of it. Even death doesn't get you out of it. That's what my life taught me. Could I ask you another hard question? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Oh man. In physical reality, like on the ground, I see myself probably still in Texas, hopefully on land, hopefully running an in-person, what I call community center, which is a play on what we traditionally know as community centers and what we can borrow from the evangelical church community, where they have these buildings where they gather once a week together as an in-person community in reverence for God. And we are doing that on a weekly basis in a different way that is also accompanied by organic food and a biofield tuning practitioner inside the building, a German New Medicine practitioner inside the building, a myofascial release therapist inside the building, yoga classes, fitness classes, a small little cafe that serves all organic food, maybe an alternative self-directed learning, homeschool co-op attached to it, a permaculture garden outside.
Good.
Like, that's what I want to do. And that's my goal for this. Like, that is my goal, is to start those. Wow. Thumbs up thing. pop up on the screen. That is my goal for this, for the way forward. That's what I want to create, is those types of things across the world. Because what I'm building, and we're launching here soon at the time of this recording with the way forward, is an ability for people to type in their zip proposal code, find like-minded people near them, like-minded farms near them they can buy directly from, like-minded practitioners of a variety of types near them that have been vetted by us, and like-minded alternative schools near them, to use virtual means to connect people back to in-person, on-the-ground community. I always give this example. I live in a town right now in Texas, a few different towns around me, but in this area, there's roughly 250,000 people. I have a lot of like-minded friends south of me in Austin, but it's pretty far drive where I currently live. I am willing to bet a large amount of money that there are a lot of like-minded people in my immediate vicinity in this area of 250,000 people, but I have no way of finding them. There's no gathering spot for them in person right now, at least. Again, hopefully we can build that. But at the least, we can use virtual tools like what we're building with the Way Forward, where I pop my zip code in and it's on an opt-in basis. You don't have to. And it's also behind a private platform where you have to sign a lot of agreements in order to be involved. You have to sign that you are definitely not a government agent and things like this. And you can find other like-minded people around you and also alternative schools. Like, how many people have messaged you before, Beth? And I know I get this all the time myself. I'm looking for X type of practitioner near me, but I have no clue where to look. I have no clue how to find them. This could be the tool for that, where you can find all the things that you need for your health and freedom-oriented community in your vicinity near you. So, and the long-term goal 10 years from now is that I'm running that. Maybe one more kid, so maybe four kids. My wife and I are still happily married and crushing it. And she's studying to be a homeopath right now, so maybe her homeopathic practice is flourishing. And we're just helping to set up these in-person communities across the world in a very decentralized way. So, yeah.
Well done. That's amazing. I had no idea where you're going to go with that, but we'll be right there, by the way. Like, honestly, it's exactly, my son and I need to get out of Canada. This infrastructure is degrading by the minute.
Are you thinking of moving here?
Oh, yes.
Yes. I'm stoked. Yeah. Yes.
We also have Missouri on the map just because there's so many good people in a short
Topher, Chance.
It's wild.
Marty. Yeah.
Marty. And it's insane. So we might do both, go and get a dome in Missouri and then have another, bring our tiny home to Texas if I could get it all the way there. So yeah, we fell in love with Texas. It was just an instant love affair for both my son and I. So yeah, Canada is awful. It's awful. We are so, I don't want to complain. I won't take time to complain about it. Actually, it's not worth it. So maybe as a last question to talk about, how do you see the future of our children different from our experience?
I'll tell you, because this relates to something that I did with my son last night. So last night, I was putting my son to bed and it just hit me that like, we haven't gone to look out, lay under the stars and look at the stars for a while. And so he and I snuck out of his bed so that my wife wouldn't hear what we were doing and went and laid and looked at the stars. And I have a list of quotes from my son of thoughts that just like pop into his mind. And so we're laying under the stars and he suddenly says, "Dad, do you ever wonder if the stars are like houses for our soul?" I said, "What do you mean?" And he says, "Like, what if the stars are where we come from and they're like our houses?" And I said, "Like each soul comes from a different house or from a different star?" And he says, "No, like each star is a home for a family of souls. So a group of souls comes from the same star."
Ooh.
Yeah. And I don't think he means in like the context of like, oh, in the past life, we were a Limerian, like alien on another planet. That's not what he means.
Yeah. That's so deep.
So he says stuff like this all the time because we're raising him in a different way. We're not poisoning him. We're also allowing him to determine his own boundaries within a, you know, acceptable spectrum. We're obviously not going to be like, "Hey, yeah, go get in a car as a 7-year-old and just drive yourself somewhere." But we encourage him to critically think. We encourage him to question us, as challenging as it is sometimes. And for example, he's learned on his own, because we explain why we eat the way that we eat, why we eat organic food, why we avoid certain foods, but then we still allow him to make his own mistakes. And then he's established a correlation himself that, yeah, when I eat those types of foods, I feel worse afterwards, or I feel agitated or irritated. So he overwhelmingly avoids them. But the other piece, and this is going to sound wild to some people, and I don't know, were you with me last year, in Acapulco, when we sat in that one room watching a demonstration of blindfolded reading?
Don't think so. No, that okay. doesn't familiar. Yeah.
So my friend, Dr. Edith Abuntu-Chan, is teaching blindfolded reading classes to kids age 13 and younger right now. My son was signed up, but we have too much going on right now, so we're signing up again in May or June. But I have a friend who's in the class right now with her kids, and she just said the other day that, oh, they're already able to see colors. All the kids that are taking this Zoom virtual class blindfolded, able to see literal colors with a blindfold on. I got to witness two kids, and out of respect for the mom, she just, they're filming a documentary on them right now, so they don't want to say who it is publicly right now. But it's a lady who many of you people probably know, who both of her kids can read blindfolded. And I was able to witness this in person myself, where the younger kid, I pulled up a random paragraph on my phone, put a piece of paper over my phone, and he had the blindfold on, and he read every word on my phone. Now, what this mom would say, and what Dr. Edith has said and is showing by teaching these classes on Zoom continually, is that this is an ability innate to all children. Like, it's not that their children are special. And yeah, like, maybe I have a higher capacity to jump high than some other people, but still have the capacity to do it in some spectrum, right? Same with these various abilities. By adopting this more natural approach to health, getting back to natural principles, by instilling critical thinking values and helping our kids to trust their own judgment and own guidance, we're creating a generation where these kids will have these innate abilities, where these kids will be saying some of these deep things that my son is saying as a 7-year-old. And we have a list on my phone that goes back to when he was 4, saying things just like that, where we're like, what did you just say? Like, we're learning these profound things that are coming from the mouths of a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old. And we're not unique in that sense. There are so many other parents that are on this journey with us who report the same things in their children. So it can be incredibly challenging to go against the grain, to try to be on the merge of this new but ancient way of doing things, of remembering who and what we are. But when you see the fruits of that labor in your kids and how different they are relative to kids that are raised in a mainstream way, it makes it all worth it. It makes it all worth it. And I'm so optimistic and excited for what we're all creating together when I see stuff like that happen.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, it's brilliant. I'm such a proud mama of an 18-year-old right now. Never jabbed, never medicated. We stopped seeing a doctor because all they did is weigh us and scare us. And it's like, you know, that's done. That's over. And it is creating a very different kind of a being that I can't take credit for. It's just you leave them be, and they naturally develop the expertise and the all kinds of things. Like, my son would never listen to me. And you do this, he would explicitly not do that.
Yeah, 100%. Same with my right? kids.
Yeah. But if it's their choice, then I'm just amazed the degree. Like, you know, anyway, I won't go on and on because I know our time is up. I want to let people know that they should go and spend some time on your channels. And so on Instagram, we've got D. Alec. And could you share with us anything special that you also would like people to check out or expect in the near future? What do you have coming up?
Yeah, just like, we're working on one final website triggering issue with our email automations and like the different tiers for thewayforward.com. But that's launching really any day now. And we're so excited for this because we've been working on it for 3 years. It functions like an app, but it's all web-based, so we don't have to deal with any worries related to the app store. And it's just going to be an incredible tool for the health and freedom community, not movement, to be able to connect with their in-person community, which I think is essential at this point in time. Again, going back to what I said earlier, whether it's arguing with people in person or or sorry, arguing with people virtually or like agreeing with people virtually, it's just so much better when you're able to sit with someone or like-minded community in person. Like, I remember you and I sitting behind the stage at Anarchapulco, just chatting with each other, and how awesome that was to connect with you in person, like finally be in your energy and share that space with you. It's just, it's so much better in person. And you, when you can do that amongst the community consistently, you just have so much hope for the future and knowing that you're not alone. And it's so validating on your journey when you can be with in-person community like that. And I guess the other thing that I'll say is I run a festival with a few partners once a year. It's called Confluence, and it's on a regenerative farm just outside of San Antonio this May, May 7th through the 12th. And you can find that at confluenceevent.com. We're really stoked this year because both Dr. Gerald Pollack is speaking, and also Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell, the leading scientist from the series, The Telepathy Tapes. She'll be speaking this year as well. So we're super stoked for that. It's going to be an incredible event.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to make it one of these
years. Well, you'll be invited to speak one of these years here soon.
Okay. So. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Then I'll have to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, brilliant. This has been a fabulous conversation. I knew it would be, but you can never know how great the bloom on that seed is really going to be. So it's just been fabulous. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Beth. It's an honor. Seriously. Thank you so much for having me.
Right on. Right on. It's brilliant. Please, everybody, help us share this. It is extremely suppressed. I wouldn't be surprised if I go to YouTube and there's less views than there was people here today. It's a constant thing. I'm always amazed they think I'm of any consequence or danger to anything, but that's the case. And I just wanted to repeat that Garrett Smith is interviewing me tomorrow, which I'm incredibly honored about. The parallels in our work is unparalleled. It's wild. And so there's been such a beautiful alliance there. I dropped a link, and you can also check all my social media for that. I'll be blasting around about it tomorrow. And I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day. Good luck with your newcomer and the move. I pray it all goes absolutely smoothly and without a hitch. And I just look forward to keeping up with you.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Beth.